Hi, this is Bernie Wides, the naturalist, back on the air at Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting from beautiful downtown Bushwick on a snowy morning. City looks beautiful today with all the snow on it. And we're going to talk about something on this program that's an event that's happening today. Two events, actually. The first event has a local interest because there's a new weight person starting in Roberta's this morning, and her name is Lacey, and it's her birthday, so we'll send happy birthday greetings to Lacey. So if you come to Roberta's today, say happy birthday to Lacey. She's just starting out today. But the other event has global importance, and it's called the Winter Solstice. And we're going to talk about the solstice, what it is, how it affects our lives, and how it's celebrated in different cultures all around the earth. So the first thing I'm going to talk about is, what is the winter solstice? And it's a very difficult concept to get unless you have a diagram in front of you. So when this program is over today, and go to your encyclopedia or take one of your kids' book on earth science or geology and take a look at the diagram. Maybe someday we'll be able to broadcast in video also. But for today, I'm going to explain it to you, and then we'll talk about how it's celebrated in different cultures. So teaching students about the solstice is difficult. I've done it a few times, and it's a difficult concept, but we'll make it very simple. Because they did a survey of graduate students, kids who were graduating from Yale University, and they said, what causes winter and summer? How come it's hot and cold? And almost everybody said, well, it's because of the distance between the Earth and the sun. And that's not really true, because the distance between the Earth and the sun is almost the same all the time. It's 93 million miles. And if it was true, the different distances between the Earth and the sun, well, we wouldn't have the changing seasons. So, because remember, in the Northern Hemisphere, where I assume most of you are living, it's winter. But in the Southern Hemisphere, it's becoming summer. So in Australia now, it's the end of spring, it's almost summertime. So if that was true, then we wouldn't be living on a planet. It would be some kind of magical, mystical tour if we could have the two distances from the sun at the same time. So we really can't do that. So what we're going to do right now is go through the actual cause of the seasons. So the thing that causes the seasons is the tilt of the Earth's axis. So if you remember way back in school days, the Earth has two movements. It rotates on its axis. That means it turns around like a spinning top, with the axis of the Earth running from north to south, from the North Pole to the South Pole. It's really an imaginary line, but it makes it easy if you visualize the Earth as a top spinning around. But at the same time as it's spinning around, it also revolves around the sun. Okay, so it has two motions. Remember, the sun is in the center of our solar system. That's why it's called solar system, because the sun is in the center. Many years ago, people thought that the Earth was in the center. And Galileo got in a lot of trouble with the Catholic Church because he said, no, that's not true. So they put him on house arrest for the rest of his life. But eventually, even the Catholic Church realized that that the Earth was not the center of the universe, but the sun was the center of our solar system. Okay, let's get back to the axis of the Earth now. The axis actually is not straight up and down. It's tilted 23.5 degrees from the vertical. So that difference of 23.5 degrees makes all the difference in the world, you might say, because this axis tilt, which points up through the North Pole and down through the South Pole. When the Earth is on one side of its orbit, the axis pointing up is also pointing roughly towards the sun, so that the sun is high in the sky at noon in the northern hemisphere. 6 months later, the axis is pointing up and pointing roughly away from the sun. Actually, the axis always points in the same direction in space, but the Earth is now on the opposite side of the sun, because the sun really doesn't go anywhere. But remember, the Earth moves around the sun, and it takes 365 days, and that's our year. But today we're just going to talk about the solstice. And by the way, the word solstice means sun stop in Latin. So keep that in mind, and we'll talk about that a little further in a minute. Okay, so summer occurs in the northern hemisphere when the axis points up through the North Pole is pointing roughly at the sun. When that tilt of 23 degrees, the Earth is leaning towards the sun, you might say. When that happens, the sun at noon is higher in the sky than at any other season of the year. So it shines directly on the northern hemisphere and provides more heat because the sun's rays are shining directly on the Earth, almost in a straight line. At the same time, the axis pointing down to the South Pole is pointing away from the sun. So the sun is lower in the sky at noon than at any other season of the year, creating, as I said, less direct sunlight, so winter occurs in Australia. There are more hours of sunlight in the summer because the sun is higher in the sky. It takes longer for the sun to rise to that height, and it takes longer to set from that position. The longer hours of sunshine help make the Earth warmer at that season of the year. As the Earth orbits the sun seems to move through the sky, but that's really an apparent motion. It really doesn't move. We are moving, and the sun is not moving. And it follows a circle in the sky. If you get up early in the morning one day and you see where sunrise is, it's roughly, in the summertime anyhow, the sun rises in the east, and it gradually climbs up the sky till noon, and then it gradually settles down in the west in the afternoon. So there's an imaginary line that the sun follows. And in the summertime, that line is almost directly overhead. And that line is called the ecliptic. There's a fancy word for you to put down. If you play Scrabble, it might even come in handy. It's the ecliptic, E-C-L-I-P-T-I-C. The ecliptic is tilted with respect to the equator by exactly the same angle as the Earth's tilt is on its axis, 23.5 degrees. So if you remember that, well, then you've learned something today. And I'm going to give you 4 points that that you should keep in mind when somebody says today, well, it's today's the winter solstice. So what? What does it mean? Okay, so just to review, and then we'll go into some cultural things about it. So remember these 4 checkpoints. When the sun crosses from below south, the equator, to above north, it's the first day of spring, called the vernal equinox. And we won't talk about that until springtime, so just put that away somewhere. When the sun reaches the furthest point north in the ecliptic, remember that's the imaginary line across the sky, it's the summer solstice, and we'll save that for the summertime. When it crosses the equator, going back down south, it's the start of fall, the autumnal equinox. And when the sun gets as far south as possible on the ecliptic, it's the winter solstice. And that's today. Okay? So what we're going to do now is we're going to stop for a minute. And I want to remind you that this is the Heritage Radio Network. The program is The Naturalist. I'm Bernie Wides. And our sponsor today is TechServe. So we'll be back in a moment. And I'll continue the story, and we'll talk about how the solstice is celebrated in different cultures on the earth. Hi, here we are back on the air with Bernie Wides, the Naturalist, on a beautiful sunny morning in winter in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And remember, we're sponsored by TechServe. And we were talking about the solstice. So I said that the solstice, the word solstice means sun stop. And what that literally means is that the sun, which has been sinking lower and lower in the horizon up until now, reverses itself. So solstice means that the sun is stopping, and it appears to be stopping, and it will start, the days will start to get longer. Okay, so in the northern hemisphere where we live, the summer solstice, oh, we mentioned that, so we won't talk about it again now. Okay, so in the northern hemisphere, the winter solstice is the day with the shortest amount of daylight during the year. And we can consider ourselves lucky because that's why we have seasons. And if you were living, for example, in the Arctic Circle, which is much further north than us, we are about 40 degrees north of the equator in latitude. And I'll just remind you about latitude. Latitude starts at zero at the equator, and the latitudes get higher as you go up north to the North Pole, which it's 90 degrees. So we're living at 40 degrees, which is, you know, sort of in the middle, and it gives us the seasons and the changing climate. So if you lived at the North Pole or in the Arctic Circle, you would have had sunset in September, and there would be no sun until March. And that would be because the sun, it was so low in the sky that no sunlight shines in those months. Okay, so you might say, well, if the sun is rising, the days start to get longer, how come it's not warmer in January and February than it is now in December? Well, there's a lag because if you picture the Earth, most of the Earth is covered with water. 70% of the surface of the Earth is water and the rest is land. And there's a lag in temperatures in the oceans. So the oceans that surround us here in New York City, then the Hudson River estuary and the bays and all that stuff, the water temperature now is colder than the air temperature. And it takes a long, long time for the water to warm up again. So that's one of the reasons why it's still colder, even though the days are getting longer. But remember, the days get longer very slowly, a few minutes each day. So now we'll talk about the cultural aspects of the solstice. In some cultures, it's referred to as midwinter, which is a pretty good term because it's really almost like the middle of the winter. In Asian countries, it's called Dangju. I guess that's in Chinese. In some places, it's called the Yule, Yule. In some places, Seba, Seli. And in some places, it's called Sayal. And this one I can't pronounce. I don't know where it's at. Seva Zistan. Or the Solar New Year, or the Longest Night. So astronomically speaking, it marks the beginning of short nights and lengthening days, as I said. So let's talk about some celebrations in other cultures. Okay? So worldwide, the interpretation of the event has varied from culture to culture, but most cultures have a recognition of rebirth involving holidays, festivals, gatherings, rituals, or other celebrations around this time. So I picked out some random ones because there's so many celebrations in so many cultures that we couldn't cover them in a half-hour show. So one of them, well, I'll give you a little history of it first. Okay. In our culture. Since 45 BCE, when the 25th of December was established in the Julian calendar as the winter solstice in Europe. So the Julian calendar was because it was Pope Julian who said, we're going to make the calendars such and such. So the winter solstice in Europe has been on the 25th, roughly, in the Julian calendar. The difference between that calendar and the year is very little difference. 365.25 days, And the tropical year, which is the year that we use now, is 365.24 days. So it moved the day associated with the actual astronomical solstice forward approximately 3 days every four centuries until 1582, when Pope Gregory the 13th changed the calendar, bringing the northern winter solstice to around December 21st. Yearly in the Gregorian calendar, the solstice still fluctuates slightly, but in the long term, only about one day every 3,000 years. So today, the solstice where we live occurs just about an hour or two from now. If we were on standard time, it would be 12:47, but since we're in daylight savings time, and before we move back an hour, it's going to be at 1:47, if you want to be exact about it. Okay? Okay, so how cultures interpret the solstice is varied, and since it's sometimes said astronomically to mark either the beginning or middle of the hemisphere's winter, and winter is a subjective term, so there is no scientifically established beginning or middle of winter. But the winter solstice itself, clearly calculated within a second, for Celtic countries such as Ireland, the calendrical winter season has traditionally begun on November 1st on All Hallows, or Samhain, which is spelled S-A-M-H-A-I-N. I don't know how to pronounce some of these words. And winter ends and spring begins on Imboli, or on Candlemas. Now, I have a fond remembrance of Candlemas because I used to go to Mexico in the wintertime, and on February 1st or 2nd, there would be a big celebration in the town, and all the folks from surrounding the town would come in to sell plants and flowers, signifying the beginning of the spring. And the word Candlemas means that in the Catholic Church, people would bring their candles to be blessed at the Mass, therefore the word Candlemas. And that was traditionally the beginning of spring, which was February 1st to 2nd. This calendar system of seasons may be based on the length of days exclusively. Most East Asian cultures define the seasons by solar terms, with Dangzi at the winter solstice as the middle or the extreme of winter. This system is based on the sun's apparent height above the horizon at noon. So remember we mentioned that? The ecliptic, which is this line that runs across the sky. So some midwinter festivals have occurred according to lunar calendars, and so took place on the night of, in Hawaii, it's called Hoku, which is the night of the full moon closest to the winter solstice. So there they got the lunar calendar involved. In many European solar calendars, midwinter celebrations still center upon the night of December 24th, leading into December 25th, which was considered to be the winter solstice upon establishment of the Julian calendar, which I mentioned before. In the Jewish Talmud, which is commentaries on the Old Testament, Tikufat Tevet, the day of the winter solstice, is recorded as the first day of winter. It was called the stripping time, or winter season, because that's the time when they stripped all, if there were anything left on the trees, they took them off because the trees were getting ready for the spring. Okay, so what about sunrise and sunset? Due to the Earth's elliptical orbit and axial tilt, remember about the 23-degree tilt, neither the earliest sunset or the late sunset falls exactly on this day. So, because the Earth orbits around the sun in an elliptical pattern, not a circle. So that throws it off a little bit, but it's always very close to this day of December 21st. Okay, the solstice itself may be been a special moment of the annual cycle of the year, even during Neolithic times. Astronomical events, which during ancient times controlled the mating of animals, the sowing of crops, and the metering of winter reserves between harvests, shows how various cultural mythologies and traditions have arisen. This is attested to by physical remains in the layout of the late Neolithic and Bronze Age archaeological sites, such as Stonehenge in Britain, and Newgrange in Ireland. The primary axis of both of these monuments seems to have been carefully aligned on a sight line pointing to the winter solstice sunrise. That's Newgrange in Ireland. I haven't been there to see that one, but one of these days we'll go and take a look. And the winter solstice sunset in Stonehenge, okay? Significant in respect to Stonehenge is the fact that the great stone was erected outward from the center of the monument, and its smooth face was turned towards the midwinter sun. The winter solstice may have been immensely important because communities were not certain of living through the winter and had to be prepared during the previous 9 months to get ready for winter. Because starvation was common in winter between January and April, also known as the famine months. And here we'll stop, and we're going to take a short break again and think how lucky we are. And most of us, we don't have to worry about the famine months in winter because you can go to the supermarket or store anytime and buy food. And here I am sitting looking at Roberta's restaurant where I'm going to have lunch a little while. And we don't have to worry about famine. So we'll take a break right now. And this is the Heritage Radio Network, Bernie Wides and Naturalist. And our sponsor today is TechServe. And remember, we'll be back in a few minutes and we'll continue talking about celebration of the solstice around the world. Okay, here we are back on the air. We took a short break, and it's nice to see the sun is still shining. This beautiful day out here in Bushwick, and this is the Heritage Radio Network, Bernie Wides, your naturalist, and we were talking about the solstice, and we stopped when we mentioned that the winter time was a very serious time for people living in these latitudes, in England and Scotland and Wales and Ireland and all Northern Europe. Because it was the time of the starvation. So in temperate climates, which on the earth, these are called temperate climates, the midwinter festival was the last feast celebration before deep winter began. Most cattle were slaughtered so they would not have to be fed during the winter. So it was almost the only time of the year when a fresh supply of meat was available. The majority of wine and beer made during the year was finally fermented and ready for drinking. The concentration of the observances were not always on the day commencing at midnight or at dawn, but the beginning of the pre-Romanized day, which falls on the previous evening. So the celebrations were not started the actual morning of the solstice; they were started the night before. So a lot of holidays are still like that. I know, like the Jewish festival of Hanukkah starts on the evening of the day before, as the sun goes down, Then you light the candles, and that starts the this winter Jewish festival. Okay, since the event is seen as the reversal of the sun's ebbing presence in the sky, concepts of birth or rebirth of sun gods have been common. And in cultures using winter solstice based on cyclic calendars, the year as reborn has been celebrated with regard to life and death and rebirth deities or new beginnings. So in some places where the calendar is based just on the solar calendar, the year starts on the solstice. But we don't start the new year on the solstice. We start it, you know, a week later, okay? So one of the death and rebirth deities or new beginnings is called Hagmani, H-O-G-M-A-N-A-Y, Hagmani's re-redding, a new year cleaning tradition where it was time to clean up the house and get ready for the new year. In Greek mythology, the gods and goddesses met on the winter and summer solstices, and Hades was permitted on Mount Olympus. Also, reversal is another theme used in the Saturnalia with slave and master. If you're not familiar with that holiday, the Saturnalia predates Christmas, and Christmas was put on the day of the Saturnalia because it was a big Roman festival, and on that day, they switched. The masters became slaves, and the slaves became masters just for one day. So many outside traditions are often adopted by neighboring or invading cultures. Some historians will often assert that many traditions are directly derived from previous ones, rooting all the way back to those begun in the cradle of civilization or beyond, much in a way that corroborates the speculation on the origin of language. So we think that languages that we use today are based on ancient languages, and holidays that we celebrate today are based on ancient holidays. So, you know, the cold and the darkness affects people differently. So I'm going to talk about some of those effects. So even in modern cultures, these gatherings are still valued for emotional comfort, having something to look forward to at the darkest time of the year. This is especially the case for populations in the near polar regions of the hemisphere, north of us, Greenland, Iceland, Northern Europe, Northern Norway, Denmark and Sweden, and Northern Russia, these populations, because the winter's a little more severe there. The depressive psychological effect of winter on individuals and societies are for the most part tied to the cold, tiredness, and sort of a feeling that you don't want to do anything except sleep and inactivity. This is known as seasonal affective disorder. You know, today we put a name on and everything and initials. So this is known as SAD, seasonal affective disorder. And you may be affected with it, and I might be affected with it, and we don't realize it, that we just want to stay in bed and sleep and just do nothing and maybe just drink and celebrate the sun coming back. Also, insufficient sunlight on the short winter days increases the secretion of melatonin in the body, throwing off the circadian rhythm with longer sleep. You know, we have a circadian rhythm, which means a rhythm of day and night and sleeping at night and being awake during the day. But because of the shortened days, it throws off our circadian rhythm or clock. So exercise, light therapy, where you put a lot of lights on and people will treat themselves with maybe even go to a tanning salon, and increase negative ion exposure, which can be attained from plants and well-ventilated flames, burning wood, or beeswax. I haven't checked these out myself, but you may try it. Maybe, well, that's why we have the fires anyhow, for brightness. And it says, where I looked this up, can reinvigorate the body from its seasonal lull and relieve winter blues by decreasing melatonin secretion and increasing serotonin and temporarily creating a more even sleeping pattern. So if you go traveling across time zones and you suffer from jet lag, one of the ways to help avoid it is to take melatonin, which will help you get back on your normal sleep cycle. Okay, I know when I travel Last year I traveled to Southern Africa, so we crossed some time zones. And when I got back, it took me about a week to get readjusted to it. So midwinter festivals and celebrations occurring on the longest night of the year are often called for evergreens, therefore our Christmas trees, wreaths, bright illumination, candles, large ongoing fires, feasting, communion with those close to us, and evening physical exertion, by dancing, drinking, and singing are examples of cultural winter therapies that have evolved as traditions since the beginning of civilization. So remember, when we celebrate this time of year, when we celebrate the holidays, Christmas, New Year's, the Hanukkah festival, and all that, they all have to do with light, because we have this feeling that we're not getting enough light in our lives to keep us healthy. So all these festivals have evolved from the Eastern Asian ones. One of them is called the Amaterasu in Japan, where the myth says that the sun goddess is sleeping in a cave, and you have to make a lot of noises and celebrate to wake her up so she'll come out of her cave and see that it's time to rise up in the heavens again. So that's just one example of a festival celebrated in Japan. And this one is called Brumalia in the Roman kingdom, influenced by the ancient Greek Lenina festival. This was an ancient Roman festive solstice honoring Bacchus. And if you know who Bacchus was, he was the god of winemaking. So many, generally, and that was celebrated for a month, and it ended on December 25th. The festival included drinking and merriment. The name is derived from the Latin word bruma, meaning shortest day or winter solstice. The festivities almost always occurred on the night of December 24th. So if you wonder why Christmas is celebrated in the middle of the winter, on December 24th, 23rd, around that time, it's because it was adopted from pagan and ancient civilizations that the Catholic Church decided that people were celebrating, so they would substitute all these wild festivals and make it put a religious overtone on it. And therefore, it became Christ's birthday, which many people celebrate. But we still stick to the old customs of drinking and celebrating and having a good time. So what we'll do is if I have time for one more, well, we all know about Christmas and how it was put in to replace the Saturnalia. And now I'm going to sign off. This is Bernie Wides and Heritage Native Radio Network, sponsored by TechServe.